Welcome to the Super Gamer Podcast. Welcome to the new Super Gamer Podcast, episode 199. We're so close to 200. Our guest this week is an actor, writer, producer, and highly sought after game master, and is currently game mastering The Fourth Age, which is an actual play using the One Ring system by Free League Publishing. It just started at the end of April, and it explores Middle Earth after The Lord of the Rings happened, about 50 years after, I think. Anyway, we have Edward Spence here. Thank you for being here.
I don't think I've ever been described as highly sought after. I have to say, it is doing wonders for my very fragile ego, but thank you so much.
Of course, thank
you. It's so nice to be here.
Yeah. So yeah, the Fourth Age, I mean, you've implied, I guess, in the highly sought after thing, you've done GMing for a variety of games. The current one is The Fourth Age, and something I'm very interested in because I love Lord of the Rings. Is it going into that, like how did the idea come about, and is it scary? Because I imagine you must have people who are like, well, that's not what would happen.
Yeah, it's definitely intimidating. I've been incredibly fortunate over the years to have worked on a variety of very rewarding, very meaningful projects, and an incredible array of talent. I wouldn't be doing nearly as much as I am were it not for just the sheer skill and goodwill of so many people within the community. It is, I feel within actual plays, there is a generosity that you, and I guess a lack of ego, I think, among some circles. Maybe I'm just very lucky in the circles I've moved in. But definitely moving into Middle Earth was something that, it was a different level of imposter syndrome than I usually get. Because as you so rightly say, it means so much. And I would posit that most people of our generation probably fell in love with fantasy and therefore sought out D&D, role-playing games, TTRPGs, I would argue in large part because of specifically the film trilogy that came out when we were young. But yeah, in terms of how it came about, so Sam and myself, Sam is a tireless producer and an incredible champion and voice within the TTRPG community, just full stop. But she started working, and she'll need to verify this, but she started working with Wounded Warrior Project, I believe just over a year ago now, as part of their Stream to Serve. They raise money for veterans and their families, and it's a charity from which a great many people have benefited. But Sam was brought on around a year ago, and we'd done a lot of role-playing together beforehand. We met on a charity campaign longer ago than I would care to remember, but it was for Mermaids UK, a trans charity, and we were raising money for a variety of other grassroots campaigns as well. And we met as a GM and player on that, and with the exception of the Atlantic between us, we've essentially been joined at the hip ever since. And so when Sam was brought on to Wounded Warrior Project, it was her idea to use role-playing games as a means of raising money for the charity and bringing in new casts for each project and sort of bringing in new and exciting communities to basically be a part of the worlds that we were building. And yeah, we were coming up to the end of the third season of our last campaign, which was an 80s sort of very Spielbergian Tales from the Loop campaign, another wonderful system by Free League. And we were coming to the end of that, and we decided that season three was probably going to be the end of that particular story. And it was, I think, a couple of nights before Christmas, and we were up, well, I was up very late, she was up very early, I just messaged, and I was like, so I'm rereading Lord of the Rings, because it was the 20th anniversary of the films, and I don't know. Is there anything to, like, a sequel to this? That feels wild, but I feel there are enough gaps within Tolkien's writing that there's an interesting liminal space for us to explore. And especially within the veterans community, like, there's a huge fan base for Lord of the Rings as well. And also, you know, the nature of Tolkien's writing, the idea of raising money for veterans using the world of Middle-earth felt very apt and very right. And Sam immediately said, yep, who's your ideal cast? And we immediately just reached out to people that we'd worked with before, people that were on our respective to play with lists to collaborate with. And all of our first choices said yes. Becca Godsey, we'd worked with before, an incredible voice in the community and host of the Game Hers podcast, Critical Bard, who is ubiquitous with excellent work within the community. Jasper William Cartwright, fresh off Dimension 20. Lexi McQueen, responsible for Strix U. And yeah, people that we'd either worked with independently or with on a variety of projects. And all of them had exactly the same response. Like, we're terrified. We're terrified of approaching this world. But I think just because of the creative voices attached, there was an immediate trust that this wouldn't be a frivolous exploration into a world that meant so much to all of us. It would yield something worth telling. And I think we're all very keen on the idea of populating Middle-earth with the sort of the stories that we wanted to see within it and the people that we wanted to see within it as well. Yeah, that was a very rambling answer to your very good question. I'm sorry.
If I may, in your first episode, as a Canadian, I was so happy to hear you refer to, I think it was orc lieutenants and not lieutenants.
Well, you know, I, not to plant my British flag too deeply, because that never leads anywhere particularly good. But yeah, no, I was like, we're going to stick as close to Tolkien as possible, and you know, herbs, you know, it's yeah. But no, it's been so good. I mean, one of the wonderful things about this cast, especially, is like the amount of knowledge and research that everyone has brought to this, that, like, as everyone was sending me their backstories, they're referencing things from the appendices and the Silmarillion. And this is a group of five players who are so passionate about Tolkien's writings, just as a whole, not just the world, but the details and the mythology, and there is a real care with which that all of them have approached it, which has been very, very humbling to watch, honestly, as a GM.
So do you feel like there are bounds? I know you said, obviously, you get a lot of leeway when it comes to TTRPGs, but do you feel like there are boundaries you can't cross? Like, okay, I need an elf to be this kind of person, or you know, how much do you stay within what you think Tolkien would have done?
I mean, we had a lot of discussions initially around what are we considering canon. And I think, you know, because there are a lot of different adaptations, you know, the films get a lot of things right. And I think they adapt a lot of very cleverly around a lot of things that probably wouldn't work on film, and they turn them into something slightly different. But, you know, the fates of certain characters within the film, obviously very different in Tolkien's novels. And I think generally, and we had a lot of discussions as a cast, but also individually, as everyone was crafting their backstories. And really, the books were our Bibles, but equally, and one of the great things about Tolkien's works is, for as in-depth and as well fleshed out as it is, there are a lot of very interesting gaps left, quite deliberately, I think. What became of certain individuals, or what the purposes of certain artifacts are. And there are these lovely unknowables within the world that feel like these loose threads that we can pull on. But yeah, I think generally everyone wanted to fit the quite strict parameters of canon that do exist. I don't think we're looking to break anything, but I think certainly an evolution of the work. I think especially in a modern landscape, because, you know, it is a very white Eurocentric text. And I think, you know, because of the point of view that Tolkien was writing from at the time, and I think there's been something very exciting about going, well, let us look at the other kingdoms of men. Like, what are the worlds and the lands of Harad and Run and Khand? Like, what is their experience throughout the War of the Ring? Because I think to, you know, view any, for lack of a better word, faction within Middle Earth as a monolith, you know, there are nuances within the worlds of men, within the worlds of elves and dwarves and even orcs. I think there's definitely a sort of willingness, not necessarily to break away from the ideas of good and evil within Tolkien's work, because I think there's a reason they're so universal, but I think there's certainly within the characters, but also in the worlds that they're wanting to occupy, I think there was definitely a willingness to push those moral grays a little bit more. I think especially after the war, like, what does it mean to live in an age of peace when, for, you know, all that has come beforehand is this awful suffering and loss and grief, and especially with elves, like, how long do you allow yourself to grieve for? And when so many of your people are traveling across the sea to go to essentially heaven, why do you choose to stay? And those were conversations that we had quite a lot about, not only about what Tolkien had written, but sort of the new paths that the players wanted to forge. And for as much as possible, I guided them through sort of what, I mean, you sort of alluded to limitations within Tolkien's text earlier, and sort of like giving them, I don't know, I guess this sort of plays a little bit more into my thoughts about what GMing is generally, but essentially providing a rib cage around the lungs of the story. Like, I structured a rib cage around them so that they could basically breathe life into their characters and their narrative, I suppose. I don't know if that answers your question. I'm very sorry.
Oh, it definitely does. And actually, it leads right to On Dripping Creativity by Creative Coffee Cafe. You describe what you think the role of a GM is, and I believe you said you don't provide plot, you provide the background to the plot, something like that.
So, yeah. It came about with a conversation with Brian, who's the GM over at My First Dungeon, which is, I would argue, setting the bar for what actual play podcasts are. They do phenomenal work over there. And but yeah, we were having a discussion because we'd recently played, not as GMs, but as players over on One Shot Network, playing a game of Orbital Blues. And we both immediately messaged one another after, and we were like, oh, you're such a GM when you play. And I think because there's a real, and certainly in Brian, I can't speak for myself, and I shan't, but certainly with Brian, there is such a willingness to, there's a generosity of spirit of giving plot hooks over to the other players and allowing them to shine, and being able to use your spotlight as a way to illuminate the other characters around you. And we were talking about what the role of a GM is, and yeah, I think for me the role of a GM is to provide plot.
Pardon me, and I got it backwards.
No. Yeah, because you're absolutely right. Because you provide plot, and the players provide story.
Right.
I think because ultimately, what is story if not character? And you're essentially there to provide inciting incidents for your characters to react and generate story. is, and you know, different tables will yield different things and we'll have different views on that, but I think in terms of what I strive for, like, the ending of the story isn't up to me. It's up to the players, and I might have a vague idea of structure, and I do my best to make sure that for an audience that structure is narratively compelling and there's propulsion to that. But in terms of like the meat on the bones, that is the players. And those moments where you get to just sit back for 20 minutes and just allow characters to just be, I think is just some of the most compelling moments, certainly as a GM, I've had in any project that I've worked on.
What about my question was going to be, what about the beginning, like, who is responsible for bringing the players' characters together? Like, in games I've been a part of, there's always a certain level of, we kind of, you know, our motivations are so wildly different, so you kind of need to give the GM, like, I'll follow them, sure, I don't know why, but...
I guess it's the you meet in a tavern thing, like, right. when does that moment happen? And honestly, it's been different for different games. Like with Fourth Age, our characters didn't meet in full until episode 4, I think. It was very slow burn, and part of that was because of scheduling. Like, Becca couldn't make episode 3, so we couldn't have all of our fellowship meet then. Lexi couldn't make episode 2, so we couldn't all meet then. But for me, my planning before I receive character backstories is purely world, is purely laying out the parameters of what the world is, so I can basically provide a lore document for my players to reference the kind of tone of the story we'll be telling and the important locations that will likely play into the story. But in terms of what that story is, I don't really know up until I receive the character backstories. Because for me, I like the narrative to be born out of whatever the players give me. So if the players give me, say, 3 locations from their backstory and 5 NPCs, they are guaranteed to be in the story because they're meaningful. They're meaningful to the players, and they're therefore meaningful for the characters, which means the characters have something to gain and something to lose. And so how those characters first meet, I will often, you know, use those NPCs to incite reasons for them to travel abroad, and especially with this, because there's such a well-fleshed out map of Middle-earth, and as a result there are these incredibly distinct settings that are very spread apart, and a lot of Tolkien's work is about journeying. It's about, you know, you travel a month to get to your destination, and that's baked into the text. You know, Fellowship is basically one long hike from the Shire to Amon Hen, and that is, you know, months worth of traveling. And, you know, thankfully the One Ring as a system, journeying is so baked into that. But yeah, there was definitely a challenge early on of, okay, how do these characters meet for the first time? And I feel like it all happened very naturally. Because ultimately everyone's creating characters who want to adventure. Like, in the back of a player's mind, it's, I want to play with this group, and my character will need a reason to play with this group and to travel and explore. And certainly, like, all of the tables I've been fortunate enough to play at, there's a real sense of generosity of wanting to contribute towards one another's stories. So I feel there's always a reason to take these characters out of their comfort zone and basically give them an adventure they will want to go on. I don't know, because what's your experience? I mean, do you mainly find yourself GMing or playing, and if so, like, how do you How have you found that?
So I've GM'd twice. I've only ever played like classic D&D. And I've GM'd twice, and I'm not fast enough, especially with the rules. I don't know quite well enough to, so I do a lot of roll, like dice roll fudging. There's a lot of just show rolls and then, oh, this happened. but I do, we have one of my dear friends is our usual GM, and he's fantastic. And yeah, I do think there's just, I think it falls on us more than, I mean, he puts so much effort into it, but there's always comes a point where I'm thinking like, I don't think my character would be okay with X, you know, but we kind of need to advance the story. So let's just go on. I do think it'd be fun though to sandbag, like you'd need to be a really good improv group, I think. I don't think I'd be good enough, but it'd be hilarious to do a whole campaign where you're just sandbagging everything. Like, no, I don't want to do that.
I mean, I guess one of the interesting things about... So I mean, you mentioned sort of acting, and my background is primarily in theater and film. And, you know, there is an incredible... I think especially in a performance space... Like around a home game, it's a little bit different, but I think especially, it all comes down to why are you choosing to share this with an audience? Why are you choosing to share this story in a public setting? And ultimately, it comes down to there's an element of performance to it, I guess is what I'm saying. And with any performance, with any narrative, there's a degree of yes and. There's, I remember, who was the, I wish I could remember the lecturer's name off the top of my head, but good narratives always and then. Like there's everything that happens in your story needs to kickstart something else. It shouldn't, hang on. Let me formulate this in my head. So that's it. So the worst thing a story can do is, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this happens, because there's a monotony to that. And it means that nothing that comes beforehand kickstarts anything else. It's this happens, which causes this to happen, because this happened. And because this happened, so everything precipitates something else. And that is a form of yes-and storytelling, I think. And you can definitely have, you know, be it because of character motivations or because of the luck of a dice or, you know, what have you. Yes, but this happens, which is another interesting wrinkle. Or, you know, no, this doesn't happen, but this happens. And I think there's something fascinating about, because essentially you're telling your favorite story communally and you have no idea how it's going to finish. And there's something so fascinating about that when you have, like, there's the terms like railroading and things like that, but I think there's something so exciting and scary as well, I think, especially from a GMing perspective, when you treat it less as a railroad and you treat it as a sandbox, and you know the parameters of the sandbox and you know what exists in that sandbox, but then you hand it over to the players and you go, right, the sandbox is made, play in it. Knock down buildings, build new buildings, create NPCs, create ideas about this world, and they will exist within this world. I'm a big proponent in it is not any one person's story or world around a player, around a table rather, but the GM is there to incite. And the players are there to build, I think. And I think that's true of a pre-established world like Middle Earth or, you know, any, you know, you look at the other games that Free League are producing, like Alien and the Blade Runner RPG that they're doing. And I think they're doing Walking Dead as well. You know, these are pre-established IPs. And there are new things to say with them. I think I could be wrong. I usually am, but yeah, I think the idea of, because it's communal. It's communal, and I think communal means taking the ideas that are provided by the other people around the table and treating it with care. Because I think there's a vulnerability to playing make-believe, I think, because it's personal. You know, even if you're inhabiting the skin of another character, you are imbuing it with thoughts and ideas that are your own, and you are thinking on the fly, which is a very scary thing to do. And I think knowing that you can, not just as a character, but as yourself, go, I think this is an interesting narrative thing to do right now. And for everyone around the table to go, I agree. And I'm going to take that, and I'm going to add it to this wall, this narrative wall that we're constructing. This isn't a particularly good analogy, but but I am going to place that brick upon this, and that brick is going to be a part of the house that we are building. And slowly we will build it together. And eventually we will have our roof, and we will have our complete house, and our story will be told. But we have built it and told it together, and it is strong because of the choices that we have made. If that's not too lofty a way of putting it.
So as a stage actor, where you get that immediate audience feedback and you can feed off their energy, how do you find performing on stream, where obviously you don't see your... Although, so while I was making this question, it did occur to me, when I was watching The Fourth Age, I was like, well, maybe if you change who your audience is, because you do get immediate reactions from your players, and the players you have in The Fourth Age are very expressive and seem so invested, like, you know, you're telling a story, you can see their face like, oh my goodness, like, so maybe you do get that feedback, but yeah. The question remains.
I mean, it's interesting. I think especially as the form of actual play changes, Wounded Warrior Project is the only live actual play that I do. So we do, in addition to performing live with the players, we are also playing to a live audience that can donate money and, you know, affect what we're doing in game. They can affect the roles of the players. They can affect... you know, we have donation goals, so when they're hit, I have to provide another inciting incident that changes the story and overhauls everything. So it's interesting because we are playing in a space that is very much responding to a live audience. But you are absolutely right as well in that when you are performing and playing, and I think there is a Venn diagram between the two, you are absolutely feeding off the reactions of the people that you are playing with, and their excitement and their fear and their joy. And yeah, it's strange. Like, I honestly, I prefer, from a creative standpoint, I prefer a pre-recorded format because it gives you more control. It gives you more control over the production side of things. You know, the visuals, how you change the overlay, how you incorporate sound, how you incorporate music, how you incorporate, you know, who is privy to what information. And there's something very exciting about that. Although I will say Sam has done a phenomenal job on all of those counts, because the ways in which that, you know, she's incorporated different backdrops depending on where we are in the story, and shifting and changing the incredible overlay that we have, courtesy of Stella Luna, who's another phenomenal GM, and you should check out their work. Please, I'm imploring you, go check out their work if you're listening. But yeah, I think there is an undeniable thrill and fear that comes from performing live, because there is that strange overlap between play and theater where you are receiving an immediate reaction to the story that you're telling. And I think you can't help but shift the way the story is going. I don't know, it's like if you are on theater and you decide to deliver a line in a different way than you have done the previous week of performance, and it elicits a laugh. And maybe it's something, a line you hadn't considered as comedic before, but you note that, and you move to the next night and you do it again, and it doesn't elicit the same reaction. It's stony silence, and so you adjust again, and you know, these things will, the performance you give at the beginning of a run of theatre will be very different to the performance you give, you know, 2 months down the line if you're doing, you know, a tour or a run in a singular building. And you know, everything you do is so dependent on the audience that you have and the baggage that you bring to the stage that night, and indeed the way that other people respond to that as well. Like, it's live performance and live play, you know, there's this whole cliche around acting is reacting and listening, but I genuinely think with actual play there is, because there's this idea around metagaming and using knowledge that is above the table to quote-unquote win role-playing. But something that I've experienced over the years, especially amongst honestly the best players that I've worked alongside and collaborated with, it's people who do metagame but for the sake of the story. So, for example, a player will, their character will not be in someone else's scene, but they hear like a phrase, or they hear a character refer to something from their past. Like, let's say, you know, I lost a parent. Let's use that as an example. You as a player were not present in that scene, but you know that there is connective tissue between that character losing a parent and you perhaps losing a partner or losing a child, or, you know, what have you, or just a sense of loss. In your next scene together, you might choose to reference that. And that is metagaming to an extent, but because you have been listening to the narrative requirements of the other character and knowing I can affect a change or a progression in that character's story arc, I am going to drop this vital bit of lore about myself in order to provide connection, in order to provide progression, and in order to provide healing for that character. And I think you do that as an actor on stage as well. You listen, you know, the way a character comes in to a scene and says hello, depending on the impetus that they give you. Hello! You might respond to that very differently to the way someone might come in and go, hello. And suddenly the trajectory of that scene changes. The text is the same. The text and the script remain sacrosanct, but the context around it becomes very, very different. And that all comes because you have heard the way that someone has thrown that line to you, and you have caught it, and you have thrown it back with exactly the same intent. Or you might choose to challenge that intent as well. And, you know, that provides a different kind of tension within the scene, or harmony. But I think I've strayed wildly from the subject. But,
no problem.
But I think the best tables are the ones who listen to each other, because you can't win role playing.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
Definitely, that is something that our table is very aware of, and like, we really look down on the idea of like winning a D&D campaign. Right. It's because, yeah, we just want to have a fun story.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think the way you win D&D is by collectively shifting the spotlight onto one another, and like you say, telling a good story and bringing it to a really good, satisfying end. And I think that comes from listening, he says, having just talked for an exorbitantly long amount of time.
It's pretty obvious, I think, how acting would improve or influence how you GM, how you play, all that. What about, though, have you learned anything that you can transfer into these skills? What did you learn as a runner on set for Tuesdays with Bernie?
That is a deep dig. How did you find that?
We have our ways.
You have your ways. Honestly, an awareness that no one person is an island, especially in on a film set, on any creative process. I think it's very easy to view anything creative and artistic as quite isolating, and it can be. But I think there's also an awareness that when you are creating something together, no one person is more important than the other. One of the things that I did learn as a runner on set, having been on both sides of the camera, I, with a passion, loathe the term talent. Both as an actor and as a runner, the term, okay, let's bring the talent on set, really rubs me the wrong way. Because I think everyone is bringing their skill ultimately to the table. It's not about talent, it's about practiced skill. And everyone is contributing their skills towards making that final product work. And that, you know, that goes from the actor to the director to the, you know, the AD to the camera operators to the boom mic operator to catering. You know, everyone is equally responsible for bringing that final product to screen, to stage, to the table, whatever it is, because ultimately, if one of those, any one of those positions is a weak link, or isn't as passionate or isn't as supportive as anyone else, the whole thing doesn't necessarily fall apart, but I think it is all the weaker for it.
What's the dumbest character name you've ever come up with?
Probably my own. Granny Fungus was the proprietor of an inn in my very first campaign. A name I thought of off the fly, and so of course became everyone's favorite NPC, because the dumb NPCs always are nearest and dearest to your character's heart.
This episode will come out one day before, I believe, episode 7 of the Fourth Age. Any teasers you want to give us?
The darkness is spreading, and I think as our company comes together, which will be at the start of next, no, the end of next episode, light and hope will come from the most unlikely of places. That's very generic, but I feel also, yeah, no, that feels appropriate, I think.
People can and should watch The Fourth Age on Twitch. It's Wounded Warrior Project is the Twitch channel you can see it on. You are Edward Spence on Twitter. That's Edward_Spence_. Anywhere else people can check you or The Fourth Age out?
I mean, I'm on Instagram. I barely post there. I occasionally post stories of my cat, but that is it. But you should absolutely go and check out the rest of our incredible cast, at Black Girl Mage, at Becca Godsey, at Critical Bard, at JW_Cartwright, and at Just Sam, SEUM, on Twitter. Go check them all out. They're producing amazing work independently, and as our cast as well. And also, Mark, thank you so much for this. This has been a delight, and we should do it again.
Absolutely. Edward Spence, thank you so much.
Thank you.